Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
You know what? I don't care what anybody says. I like it when Gaddafi is doing TV. I think it's good TV. It's not good government, but it's great TV. However, ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the point where I think it's clear there is an historical mandate that the 21st century is presenting to us. To wit, it's okay if you want to be a dictator, but you can't be crazy. There's got to be some sort of screening process so that the sane people who want to be dictators rise to the top of that particular poll. I'm sure we'll all be working on it. A very brief tale of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, well, yeah, kind of. Dear Harry, Kelly writes, and she writes, Dear Harry, and to all at Le Show, so all y'all on the staff, take a 10. And by that, I mean 10 years. Dear Harry, upon my arrival into the United States yesterday from the very dangerous country of Switzerland, I was required to fill out a customs declaration sheet made by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. On this sheet, I found these two sentences, quote, comment cards are available to complement or provide feedback, FEEBACK. Thank you and welcome to the United States, UNITIED States. Feedback. She concludes, I can tell how serious this matter is. So thank you, Kelly, and welcome. I'd love to have your feedback. Make it in fives and twenties, please. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we have been told, we've got the word from the Defense Secretary of the United States, his own self, Defense Secretary Gates, told an audience of West Point cadets a couple days ago that it's unwise for the United States ever to fight another war like Iraq or Afghanistan. Where were you 10 years ago? Oh, you were in the government. And that the chance of carrying out a change of government in that fashion again, chances are slim. Quote, in my opinion, any future defense secretary who advises the president to again send a big American land army into Asia or into the Middle East or Africa should have his head examined, as General MacArthur so delicately put it, Gates told an assembly of army cadets. Well, fat lot of good it did when MacArthur said it. This would be the Gates doctrine and destined to have the same long shadow in history as the Powell doctrine. That is to say, if Gates is still in government 10 years from now, some president will come along and take the piece of paper on which Gates wrote this doctrine and make him eat it and crap it out in public. The Army, Gates says, will have to reshape its budget, since potential conflicts in places like Asia or the Persian Gulf are more likely to be fought with air and sea power. Ooh boy, toys. The odds of repeating another Afghanistan or Iraq invading, pacifying, and administering a large third world country may be low, says Gates. All right. Get your bets in. I have been advised by a listener to ignore the other two listeners, so here we go. News of AFAC! To the shock of President Hamid Karzai's aides, General Petraeus suggested last week at the presidential palace that Afghans caught up in a coalition attack in northeastern Afghanistan might have burned their own children to exaggerate claims of civilian casualties, according to two participants at the meeting. Bring their own children, ladies and gentlemen. The exact language Petraeus, he's making friends wherever the exact language Petraeus used, he's not long for that job, there are rumors, and Elliot Spitzer needs a new co-host. The exact language Petraeus used in the closed-door session is not known, neither is the precise message he meant to convey, but his remarks about the deadly U.S. military operation in Konar province were deemed deeply offensive by some in the room. Hearts and minds, babe. They spoke on condition of anonymity to the Washington Post. They said Petraeus dismissed allegations by Karzai's office and the provincial governor that civilians were killed and said residents had invented stories or even injured their own children to pin the blame on U.S. forces and force an end to the operation. I was dizzy. My head was spinning, said one participant, referring to Petraeus's remarks. This was shocking. Would any father do this to his children? This is really absurd. Didn't speak in that accent, by the way. Petraeus, through a spokesman, declined to speak. Yes, that's what you need a spokesman for, to not speak. That's when you really need him. More news of AFPAC. The Pakistani authorities have arrested a second U.S. government security contractor amid that worsening spy agency dispute between the countries, with Pakistani intelligence calling on the Americans to come clean, about its network of covert operatives in Pakistan. This comes at the start of the murder trial of the American already being held in Pakistan, the CIA agent Raymond Davis. Peshawar police arrested Aaron DeHaven, a contractor who recently worked for the U.S. Embassy, saying his visa had expired. Well, that's not a big deal. But anyway, in the buried lead department, while we're at it, you know that it was a long time coming for Americans to be aware that this Raymond Davis, who shot two people, two Pakistanis, was in fact a CIA agent for weeks, the president of the United States was describing him as one of our diplomats, Mr. Raymond Davis. And now it turns out he's and not until, in fact, the Guardian of London outed him on Monday, was it admitted by the New York Times that, in fact, he is a CIA agent. The Times then bothered to explain why they went through all this, that they had been asked by the State Department to keep the story, well, to temporarily withhold information about Davis's ties to the agency, which argued that disclosure of his specific job would put his life at risk. Okay, that's in a story from the New York Times. Way at the bottom, buried Leadville, is this. Even before his arrest, Davis's CIA affiliation was known to Pakistani authorities who keep close tabs on the movement of Americans. His visa, presented to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in 2009, describes his job as, quote, regional affairs officer, unquote, a common job description for CIA officials. So the State Department asked the New York Times to keep it secret, even though the Pakistanis knew, is the lead. To me, you see what I'm saying. And while we're remembering things that President Obama has said in the recent past, there's this.
Understand this. If American workers are being denied their right to organize and collectively bargain when I'm in the White House, I'll put on a comfortable pair of shoes myself. I'll walk on that picket line with you as President of the United States of America. Because workers deserve to know that somebody's standing in the court.
That's the sound of him putting on the shoes. Hello, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
from Leicester Square in London, England. Yeah, it's carnival time here too, isn't it? Hard to tell. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
How does he do that?
We can listen to the warm.
A panel of scientists speaking this week at the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science unveiled new research and models, demonstrating how climate change could increase exposure and risks of human illness originating from ocean, coastal, and Great Lakes ecosystems. Some studies project impacts to be felt within 30 years. 30 years. With 2010, the wettest year on record and third warmest for sea surface temperatures, NOAA and our partners are working to uncover how a changing climate can affect our health and our prosperity, says Jane Lubchenco, Undersecretary of Commerce for Oceans and Atmosphere and NOAA Administrator. In several studies funded by NOAA's Oceans and Human Health Initiative, findings shed light on how complex interactions and climate change alterations in sea, land, and sky make ocean and freshwater environments more susceptible to toxic algal blooms and proliferation of harmful microbes and bacteria using cutting-edge technologies. There you go. One team looked at blooms of red tide, which produces saxitoxin, a poison that can accumulate in shellfish. If it's consumed by humans, it can cause gastrointestinal and neurological symptoms, including vomiting and muscle paralysis, or even death in extreme cases. That is kind of extreme. Longer harmful algal bloom seasons could translate to more days the shellfish industry is closed, threatening the vitality of the industry around the country. Changes in the harmful algal bloom season appear to be imminent, and we expect a significant increase in Puget Sound and similar at-risk environments within 30 years, says one of the researchers. All right, there's that. There's this. Studies by U.S. Department of Agriculture scientists and cooperators have confirmed what many pollen-sensitive people already suspected. In some parts of North America, ragweed season now lasts longer and ends later. Ragweed pollen in some parts of the northern United States and Canada now lingers almost a month longer than it did in 1995, and these increases are correlated to seasonal warming shifts linked to climate change dynamics in the higher latitudes. That's in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. That's one way the plant kingdom is adapting to increases in air temperature and other meteorological phenomena. A plant physiologist in Beltville, Maryland, led a scientific team. They found that from 1995 to 2009, the number of frost-free days at higher latitude study sites had increased, as had the length of the ragweed pollen season. And drier conditions projected to result from climate change in the southwest United States will likely reduce perennial vegetation cover, resulting in increased dust storm activity. It's just going to be more sneezing ahead, ladies and gentlemen. That's all it is. Just a lot more sneezing. Increased dust storm activity in the future, according to a new study of scientists with the U.S. Geological Survey and UCLA. Hey, go Bruins with your study. The research team examined climate, vegetation, and soil measurements collected over a 20-year period in national parks in southeastern Utah, home of the Jazz. Long-term data indicated that perennial vegetation in grasslands and some shrublands declined with temperature increase. They then used these soil and vegetation measurements in a model to project future wind erosion. They strongly suggest sustained drought conditions across the southwest will accelerate loss of grasses and some shrubs and increase the likelihood of dust production. So, if anybody wonders what production will be increased in the future, dust production. Sure. That's news from News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, the new F-bomb, foreclosure. And by the way, there will be, for those of you who did not hear the interview on this broadcast with Eve Smith, who is something of an expert on the subject of the whole foreclosure mess now spreading across, well, having spread across the country, because that was right at the beginning of Christmas season. And, you know, who wants to listen to foreclosure interviews at Christmas time? So that interview will be rebroadcast with some updates next week on this program. And this will be apropos. The Florida Attorney General has opened an investigation into a Hollywood, Florida law firm. Don't get excited, Hollywood, California law firms. Your turn, because no, you don't do this sort of stuff. The firm is called Ben Ezra & Katz. It processes thousands of foreclosures for lenders. The investigation is based on allegations of presenting false and misleading documents in court. That's all. No biggie. That's what we've been told for months. Now the Florida Attorney General is investigating. This is the eighth high-volume foreclosure practice targeted by state investigators within the past year regarding similar claims. You know, like fraud, involving paperwork submitted to judges. The firm says it's laid off almost half of its employees days after the government-owned mortgage giant Fannie Mae terminated its relationship, citing document execution issues. They'll dance around the word fraud like they were on Dancing with the Stars like they're in a dance marathon from the 30s. They'll be dancing that long. The Florida bar is also investigating the actual partners in the firm on one complaint each involving foreclosure fraud. There's the word. They said it. Spokesman for the firm declined to comment. That's why he's a spokesman, so he doesn't have to speak. He did release a statement. Well, he's a statesman, announcing the law office had retained a former federal prosecutor and 10-year state legislator to, quote, provide support with quality control and to help evaluate policies and procedures, unquote, by which he means to try to lean on the judge. Isn't that right? Isn't that what that means? I'm sorry. I must have misspoke. I need my spokesman here to re-misspeak for me. The Attorney General's office said fabricated or misleading documents had been, quote, presented in court before judges as actual assignments of mortgages and properly prepared affidavits that have later been shown to be inadequate and or insufficient. A judge in Miami castigated one of the lawyers in that firm for, quote, wasting the court's time by filing sham foreclosure documents, unquote. There's a judge speaking English, and citing him for contempt. The Attorney General has argued in all eight of its foreclosure investigations that the firm's business procedures violate the state's Unfair and Deceptive Trade Practices Act. In case you're wondering why foreclosures may be grinding to a halt in Florida and in some other states as well. A judge in Massachusetts recently noticed similar stuff going on. So the F-bomb, the new F-bomb, ladies and gentlemen, coming your way if it's not already there. And now,
he's not a general,
he commands no troops,
he's not an inspector,
he peeks at no stoops,
he's an
inspector general.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And this is apropos also of our friend the Atom, a failed project. We love those. Plan to treat Hanford's radioactive sludge. Yeah, it needs to be treated. What, you think it could just sit there? It cost $43 million without producing any results, according to an audit by the Department of Energy's Office of Inspector General. How could this be, you're asking yourself? And I, overhearing you doing that, say, the audit blamed problems on a rush to do the work to meet legal deadlines without first figuring out if the project's technology could be safely used and would, in fact, work. They just didn't figure out if it was safe and if it could work. That's all. Otherwise, the project was canceled in 2007, but not before $43 million was spent over 3 years on engineering and equipment. Ooh, big equipment auction. Now, the Department of Energy has a new strategy for cleanup of the sludge. Still in the design phase, it's too soon to evaluate the new plan's effectiveness. But the projected cost, you'll be glad to know, of the new way of doing things has significantly increased. It costs more when you actually do it. Only $43 million if you don't accomplish anything. To actually accomplish something costs more. That shouldn't be any surprise. The sludge would be treated, packaged, and shipped to the waste isolation pilot plant in New Mexico for disposal. It's not like getting rid of radioactive waste is hard or anything. It's, you know, like that. Now, new contractor estimates it'll cost almost $175 million to move the sludge to another facility. The sludge right now is located in a facility 400 yards from the Columbia River. What could be wrong with that? Three-eyed salmon? Yes, please, another order. That estimate, $175 million, does not include the cost to store the sludge at an interim facility, nor to treat and package it for disposal. The audit says, this project addresses a complicated one-of-a-kind waste with uniquely challenging nuclear chemistry. Managing a project like this is no easy matter, they say. Fuel irradiated to provide petroleum for the nation's nuclear weapons program was left unprocessed in cooling basins after the Cold War ended. The fuel corroded and formed this radioactive sludge at the bottom of the pools. The last of the fuel has been removed. The sludge is being held in underwater containers. That's what's going on. The audit found the Department of Energy did not manage the project well, nor did it ensure that the contractor adequately managed the project well itself. Instead of using one of five mature technologies, the contractor chose to heat the sludge to oxidize the uranium. Get it. And now, I think for this next story on the subject of our friend the atom, we need the sound of a rainout. During a conference call with Vermont Yankee nuclear plant staff regarding the ongoing groundwater contamination investigation at the plant, technicians said the source is still unknown. Pressure tests have been completed on two of five underground lines in the vicinity. One possibility of these pervasive leaks at this nuclear plant in Vermont could be a phenomenon called rainout. Rainout refers to what happens when an airborne release of tritium, that's a radioactive isotope, is occurring from the plant, typically via the plant stack. At the same time, there's precipitation. That's a cute story. Taking a little batting practice while we're waiting for the clouds to clear. The tritium can be deposited on plant buildings or the ground, and subsequent rainfall can then wash that contamination into the groundwater at the site. So much for rainout. When we are testing fluctuations in groundwater contamination, particularly at the new levels. So rainout, that's the new answer to why there's tritium leaking all over the place at Vermont Yankee. Because it's our friend the atom. He's got to get out somehow. He just wants to be with you. He just wants to hang. That's our friend the atom. And ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. Because we're getting more godly all the time. At least some of us are. And the rest of us just get to watch. The Catholic Church in Rome made an extraordinary admission this week, according to the Independence correspondent in Rome. It is aware, ladies and gentlemen, that priests from at least 23 countries have been sexually abusing nuns. The Catholic Church made the extraordinary admission. The abuse occurred in Africa, mainly, where priests vowed to celibacy, who previously sought out prostitutes, have preyed on nuns to avoid getting AIDS, you see. Confidential Vatican reports obtained by the National Catholic Reporter in the States have revealed that members of the clergy have been exploiting their financial and spiritual authority to gain sexual favors from nuns, particularly those from the Third World, who are more likely to be culturally conditioned to be subservient to men. Well, that's a perfect situation. That works out. That's a system. That's not a flaw. The reports, some of which are recent and some of which have been in circulation for at least 7 years, said that such priests had demanded sex in exchange for favors, such as certification to work in a given diocese. Well, who wouldn't for, you know, that? In extreme instances, the priests had made nuns pregnant and then encourage them, ladies and gentlemen, to have abortions. You see. And a former Irish priest exposed as a pedophile has been divorced by his wife in Scotland, according to the Sunday Independent. Bill Carney, named as a serial child abuser in a big report into Irish clerical abuse in the Dublin diocese, divorced late last year. He's now living in England after selling the bed and breakfast business he shared with his former wife in Scotland. He was forced out of the priesthood in the 1990s, facing a host of civil actions in Ireland after he was accused of abusing up to 32 children. Police investigating the complaints against him have been in contact with authorities in England and Scotland, but yet have yet to question the former priest. His former son-in-law said he's telling people he's done nothing wrong. This is the former priest's son-in-law. And people believe him, he says, because if he had done something wrong, the authorities would have done something about it by now. Carney did plead guilty to indecently assaulting two altar boys in 1983 and then was moved from parish to parish in Dublin for almost 10 years before finally quitting the priesthood with a $50,000 payout from the Catholic Church. Good abuse, babe. Here's 50,000. See you later. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, we did. Hello. We did that. I recognize that. We did that. We didn't do this. I was being punished.
From all my producers are calling the virtual Nate and Al's. This is the Larry King radio program. And we said we're going to do stand-up and we're going to do radio. And let me tell you, this sure isn't stand-up. You know, I did radio in the old days, 5 hours in the middle of the night. These days you can do, you know, 3 hours a day. I don't want to do that. I said, what about 15 minutes? They said, Paul Harvey's dead. So you can do three, you know, a couple minutes. I said, all right, I got to do stand-up. Give me the few minutes. So this is going to be like the Osgood file for people under 80. And we're going to have guests. And we're going to take phone calls. It's all going to move faster than Piers Morgan's Q rating. And we got our first call at 1-800-TELL-LARRY. We didn't even give out the phone number. How about that? Reno, Nevada. Hello.
Hey, Larry. Long time listener. First time felon. Hey, man, it's the juice.
O.J. Simpson calling from prison. You couldn't get a better stunt booking if we tried. O.J., how you doing?
Oh, I'm okay, Larry, yeah. Although I still don't have HBO. Mm. Man, you never realize how bad NBC is. So you got to watch it.
Yeah.
Look, man, I just called to say congratulations on your new gig. Yeah. You know, I was going to do radio for a while, but it was going to be 3 hours a day. My golf game was going to go to hell.
Yeah, yeah. You're not golfing now, are you?
No, Larry. You know, looking back, you know, with the hindsight of 2020 luxury, radio would have been better than prison.
Juice, there was a report in the National Enquirer last week that you got beaten up in prison. Mm. Any truth to that?
Yes, Larry, it's totally true that they reported that. No, you know, man, it's just like it was on the outside. Yeah. Really, just nothing but fellow inmates asking me for my autograph, you know, wanting me to sign their prison memorabilia.
Yeah. Juice, I remember when you were being held in city jail during your Vegas trial, you complained about the food.
Yeah.
You need any pastrami? Because we got a deal for the best in the world.
No, Larry, really good food here in medium security. Mm. You know, lots of fish, lots of boiled legumes. Really the sort of food I used to recommend on my workout video.
You can just imagine how good the food is in minimum security.
Yeah, I dream about that sometimes. But, Larry, I had a serious reason for calling.
Okay, we got a hard break in about a minute.
Cool. You know, I've been watching the news about this guy, Gaddafi.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a bad dude, you know. He said what you want to about the Jews, but I never opened fire on more than two of my own people.
And I don't think Gaddafi ever gave a quarter of what you did to my cardiac foundation. Yeah. Although we did get a heck of a donation from one of his kids.
The one who speaks English?
I hope so.
Yeah. Now, I'm just saying, Larry, you know, I'm watching the chaos, you know, and the killing, and you know, all this stuff. At the UN, which is just kind of like, you know, sports center, but with less power.
Mm.
And I was thinking, how are we going to get rid of this dude? You know, because he's not good for the Libyans. He's not good for America.
He's not good for the Jews.
There you go.
So, Jews, kind of quickly, because we lose the network at 5820. What's your point?
Larry, the only way to get Gaddafi is with an inside operation using specially trained personnel. You know, black ops, and I don't mean Superfly Black, you know.
No, you're talking secret.
That's right.
Well, I'm sure the CIA's cooking up something. That's their job.
I'm just saying, you know, someone with that kind of training, in my case, Navy SEAL training, could be very useful to that kind of operation, you know, as opposed to just sitting around trying to figure out how to siphon HBO off the warden's cable.
O.J., are you saying you'd volunteer for an operation to capture and assassinate Colonel Gaddafi? Quickly.
Hey, Larry. I may be a convicted felon and a hero in the eyes of most people, but I'm an American first. You know, my country wanted me to use my Navy SEAL training.
Now, you got that for a movie, right?
Yeah, but that was the most grueling 2 days I ever spent. So, you know, I'm here. They know where to find me. I'm either in my cell or out with the guys playing checkers. I still got my wetsuit in storage.
O.J. Simpson volunteering to kill Gaddafi.
Or at least rifle him real good.
If that don't get us to make our debut show, nothing will. Juice, I can't thank you enough.
Always a pleasure, Larry. Good luck with the show.
Good luck with the SEAL thing. Tomorrow, Newt Gingrich for the whole 4 minutes. From the virtual, Nate and Al's. So long.
Larry Train.
It's early in the morning, soon be a new day dawning, still I'm wide awake. It's not about an out insomnia. If it were, I'd know just what to take. No, this is something I have got to face. It's a sad, sad and
very sorry case of love. Never thought I'd be counting sheep, losing sleep and all that. I thought I was a real cool cat, in fact. I never thought I'd be starry-eyed. I can't decide where I'm at.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Well, what's Mikhail Gorbachev saying on his 80th, on the occasion of his 80th birthday? Don't you want to know? He's calling for fundamental change in world politics. Says the will of the people can no longer be ignored. Okay, check. In an interview with The Independent on Sunday, Gorbachev calls on David Cameron to withdraw British troops from Afghanistan. In comments that risk provoking outrage in the United States, he portrays the war against Islam as a conflict partly of the United States' own making. Quote, it's called the historical and political boomerang, he says, referring to the U.S. secret funding of Islamic extremists during the 1980s, when the Americans were fighting communism. Quote, the Americans were working in secret with those forces with whom they are now fighting. They should accept their part of the blame. Let them say so. I think God has some mechanism that he uses to punish those that make mistakes. Unquote, Gorby. He condemns the Western occupation of Afghanistan and issues a direct appeal to Cameron, the British Prime Minister. He became president after Soviet forces had occupied Afghanistan, oversaw the eventual withdrawal. He points out that Britain advised against the Soviet invasion, saying the Afghans are a special people who live by their own rules and that Britain should now heed its own advice. Payback's fun. Also from The Independent, the first warnings of what was to come, what we now have, appear in the form of a briefing paper on the website of the UN's Food and Agricultural Organization last December. Recent bouts of extreme price volatility in global agricultural markets, it said, portend rising and more frequent threats to world food security. There's emerging consensus that the global food system is becoming more vulnerable and susceptible to episodes of extreme price volatility, unquote the UN. The FAO likens extreme price volatility to great natural disasters and the combined effect, of agricultural problems was to bump up the food price index by 32% in the second half of 2010. Hey, coincidence. Now there's all these uprisings. Food and Agricultural Organization's chief economist said, in his dry manner, the present turmoil was coming. Quote, it's getting a little bit uncomfortable, he said in December. A lot of countries, especially the poorer ones, have to rely so much on world markets. They have to import food at much higher prices. Whether or not this will lead to domestic problems, turmoil, demonstrations, riots, it is not possible to predict, unquote. Well, it is now. From the Times of London, and look, somebody actually paid to buy it because you can't get it online. Thanks, Roop. Rupert Murdoch bought a production company, TV production company this week, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Paid $645 million for it, of stockholders' money for it. Guess who owned it? His daughter! When would that ever happen? How could that happen? The Lockerbie bomber, this is from the Times of London, blackmailed Colonel Gaddafi into securing his release, the bomber's release, from the Scottish prison by threatening to expose the dictator's role in Britain's worst terrorist atrocity, that is the Lockerbie disaster. This is according to a former senior Libyan official. Al-Megrahi vowed to exact revenge unless he was returned home, says Mustafa Abdul Jalil, Libya's former justice minister. Imagine that. Extorting a nice guy like Gaddafi. And speaking of which, from another source, comes an equally, if not more surprising piece of information, ladies and gentlemen, I say. As several Libyan diplomats denounced their country's four-decade ruler, U.S. consultancies that have worked to burnish Libya's and Gaddafi's U.S. image are laying low. Several consulting law and lobbying firms have moved to advise the Libyan government since U.S. sanctions were lifted. Among them, any guesses? Any hands? Richard Pearl, one of the chief architects of the Iraq invasion, ladies and gentlemen. Former Reagan-era Defense Department official and George Bush-era chairman of the Defense Policy Board. He traveled to Libya twice in 2006 to meet with Gaddafi, afterward briefed Vice President Cheney on his visits, according to documents released by a Libyan opposition group. Pearl's travel to Libya was as a paid advisor to the Monitor Group. They described that as a series of... Well, they didn't describe it, actually. That sentence led nowhere, didn't it? We'll burrow back from that. The Monitor Group did not return phone calls left at its office. Oh, it described as an action plan to introduce and bring to Libya a meticulously selected group of independent and objective experts. Pearl, listed as a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, did not respond to an email query. Libya paid $250,000 a month for the project. Damn worth it, I say. And speaking of characters like that, this morning on CNN, on Fareed Zakaria show, talking about the Libyan and the Middle East turmoil, a guy who really knows what he's talking about. Paul Wolfowitz.
The wolf's a thinking man's fighter. Lisa packed his bag.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
J.P. Morgan Chase & Company has announced new programs geared toward military customers and veterans, apologizing for overcharging thousands of active duty service members on mortgages and improperly foreclosing on more than a dozen. Egypt's ruling military council apologized after military police beat protesters in Cairo's Tahrir Square. The Supreme Council said that what happened late Friday this week was a result of unintentional confrontations between the military police and the youth of the revolution. It stressed that it did not and will not issue orders to attack the youth, and all measures will be taken to ensure this will not happen again. And the caretaker government previously apologized to the Egyptian people for what it referred to as past mistakes. Some of these mistakes had been sins, said the interim government, but it stressed the current cabinet was not responsible for them. The statement pointed to the difficulties associated with retaining the people's confidence, which it admitted the government had lost years ago. The Archdiocese of Philadelphia, grappling anew with sexual abuse allegations and charges of a church cover-up, apologized to parishioners this week in its newspaper. "We are sorry," said the editorial. "We, the church, are sorry for the sexual abuse suffered by our brothers and sisters when they were young people at the hands of the church's clergymen and teachers. The church begs forgiveness of our brothers and sisters and of God." At the same time, the editorial emphasized that crimes against children had been reported in public schools, youth groups, and other organizations. It said the church was alone in taking the problem seriously. Oregon Representative David Wu apologized this week for sending photos of himself dressed in a tiger costume to aides on his staff, calling that and other behavior last fall unprofessional and inappropriate as his mental health suffered. Oh, and one more apology of the week from Glenn Beck.
"I have always told you that if I make a mistake, I'm going to lead with it. You also know that I don't apologize willy-nilly for things. I don't really care. Let the chips fall where they may. That is my belief. If I know I have something right, if I have something wrong, I've always told you that I want to lead with it. Well, I made a mistake on Tuesday, and I want to make sure that you understand that I was wrong on this, and that I also apologize for it. I do this because I've always told you to do your own homework, and in this case, I didn't do enough homework. I also tell you that you have to guard your word. You have to guard your honor and your integrity, because people have to be able to believe you. The only way people will believe you is if when you get it wrong, you do apologize, and you point it out, and not like the New York Times or anybody else, bury it on page two. With that being said, somebody has called me ignorant for what I said on Tuesday, and I think that's a pretty good description of my what I said. I made one of the worst analogies of all time, and I knew it when I said it, and I just kept going, because I'm like, you could hear, if you listen to the tape, you know, if you go back and listen to Tuesday's show, you can hear when I'm starting to talk. Here I am talking about Judaism, and I start comparing Islamic extremism, and it was a nightmare. And I knew it as I started in on it, and I don't know if you noticed this, Stu, but halfway through I was like, and, well, no, wait, this is not exactly, because yeah. I just knew. It says, you get into it. Here's the thing. I'm on the air for 4 hours every single day. 4 hours every day. Live. Without a script. That is a recipe for disaster. That is trouble. Man, was I stupid. And I was ignorant. And I apologize. Abe Foxman brought this to my attention. And Abe Foxman is not, I mean, he didn't directly. But on this one, he's right. And to Abe and everybody else, if I offended you, it was not my intent. I see how I did that, and I apologize for the action and the words. Enough said.
Enough said. He doesn't have any time to fill, does he? The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. That's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com or kcow.com, available on the mighty 104 in Berlin, available for your smartphone through stitcher.com, available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like figuring out how to treat that sludge if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Already, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, and thanks to Bodders, Adrian Bodnum here at Global Radio in London, for helping with today's broadcast. This program is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. And go to harryshearer.com for information on the music played here on. Go to thebiguneasy.com to find out where you can see The Big Uneasy coming to your town nationwide starting in March. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions. It originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from London.